Hey everyone, welcome to September. Going crazy yet? The back to school season has that effect on us with new schedules, new obligations, and maybe even a new kindergartner in school for the very first time. Our guest Christine Coe says you can wrangle the crazy. The parenting expert behind the Edit Your Life podcast and BostonMamas.com said the secret is to choose your obligations carefully. Here she talked to us about what that means for back to school and how, as she puts it, to edit your life, to make time for awesome.
Listening to The Work-Life Equation, the Bright Horizons Family Matters podcast for busy working families. Whether you're a working mom, a dad, or you're busy caring for other family members, we've got tips for how to fit jobs and families together and for how to make your work-life equation add up.
With school on the horizon, big question is, are you celebrating the return of the school bus or are you dreading it?
Oh my gosh, I'm so probably like a lot of parents, I'm really, really mixed. And I think I feel a bit regretful that I feel like I frittered away July being super stressed out about juggling summer and work and kids being home and no camp this week. And all that mental overhead is so overwhelming. So I feel like I only just got my act together at the beginning of August. And now I'm like, yay, I'm ready to kind of be a little more balanced and a little more fun mom, but now it's almost over. So I feel very mixed. I like the routine. I think the routine is good for my kids and good for our whole family. Other hand, dealing with homework and lunches and all that stuff is nobody's favorite. I mean, let's be honest.
So it seems that summer is the hard part because you're on your own, but school year seems surprisingly harder.
School year is no joke. I feel like there's also no like streamlined way all of those logistics, you know, there are just so many forms that come home and it's, and then, you know, if you have multiple kids, I have one who's going into high school. I cannot believe that. And then one who's going into second grade. So, you know, they're on totally different schedules and have different needs. And I feel like I shouldn't even complain because it's only two and I have good friends who have five kids,
oh,
you know.
Yeah, that's.
But I think everybody's experience and whatever level of stress they are experiencing is 100% valid.
Let's talk about survival skills. You edit your life. That is, again, minimalist, simplicity. So talk us through a few strategies from the get-go. How do we handle this?
Yeah, I think I want to actually start with one that is less maybe tactical seeming, but I think it's one of the things that I tend to get overwhelmed with. I know a lot of moms get overwhelmed with, but it is to deal with this emotional overload. You know, you're holding so many things in your head. You are assuming responsibility for just a pile of things. And, you know, it occurred to me that I think especially women, we do this. We're taking care of all the things. I mean, my husband is about as 50-50 as it gets, but towards the end of the school year, I mentioned something about figuring out summer plans and camps. He's like, I'm not going to even think about that till like the last day of school. And I'm like, yeah, that's not really.
Yeah, right.
You know, so I think my tip would be to really think about what those different things are, perhaps even write them down. That could be helpful. You know, all the different little pieces about back to school and then talk about it. If you have the good fortune to be coupled, you know, talk about it and split up those responsibilities. And I think that's just a huge thing to try to decrease your emotional load with all just the different tasks that need to be done.
Yeah, that's actually something that comes up around here. We did research on that.
Tell me, what did you find?
I mean, you know, actually what was really interesting is that even women that were breadwinners in their family were even more likely to handle more of the mental load.
I'm nodding aggressively, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to concentrate when you have all these things in your head.
Asha and I talked about it on one of our podcast episodes, but I'd actually, if your listeners haven't also listened to, in addition to this great podcast, if they haven't heard Dear Sugars with Cheryl Strayed and Steve Allman, they were talking about one, about this emotional load issue and talking about how even if you're a woman who's on a business trip, you're still thinking about, okay, did so-and-so get to, you know, this practice and okay. And I know on my last business trip, I was doing exactly that. And at one point I had to say, I just can't do that. I have to stop doing that because I can't even do anything from here.
Right.
So it definitely takes intention to kind of put on the brake and trust that somebody else is going to get the thing done. And that's actually a great thing for your kids to learn that there are other adults who can get the things done.
Not only other adults, but to, I would imagine, to empower your kids to do some things too.
Absolutely.
That's actually my next point.
Yes, yeah. That is. And even if they're coming to a full year daycare center like Bright Horizons to equip them with some of those life skills and have them empower them to take charge of some of that stuff. Laurel, my 13-year-old, came to me and said, oh, the toilet's not working, which is like words nobody ever wants to hear, right? But it wasn't that it was clogged. It was just that the little pull chain thing had fallen off. So I was about to open the back and fix it, and I said, actually, come here, Laurel. I'm going to teach you how to fix this because I don't want to be in charge of the toilet life skills anymore, right? And so I sort of made a joke saying, hashtag toilet life skills, don't want to be in charge anymore. But that conversation led to Asha and I developing a list of 100 life skills that you can teach your kids in 5 minutes or less. It like totally went viral. I don't think I've ever had anything go that viral before.
Wow.
But I think people were, it was just a reminder that there are so many little things that we as parents just kind of pick up and take care of that we can actually get our kids to do. And so, you know, some of those things relate to back to school, like putting away your laundry or making lunch or learning how to use a little paring knife to cut up soft fruit or any of those things. That's a huge piece of surviving back to school to me, is really getting your kids on board and having them realize they're part of a family system and they need to help out.
Parents. So let's talk about what resonates with parents right now. You have Boston Mamas, and I imagine you hear from people. What kind of things are you hearing that they need this time of year?
Everybody needs help with stuff, but I actually feel like parents also need time to carve out space for themselves. I've realized about myself that this sounds so simple, but I really need a good novel. And so I had asked a bunch of friends for books and book recommendations, things that they just couldn't put down. Got a bunch of recommendations, created a list, and that was probably one of the most popular posts that went out this, you know, over the last couple of weeks, because people were like, yeah, I care about quiet time to myself and I need that. So it's interesting. It's kind of like there are two sides of it. You need help with logistical things, yes. And then you also just need reminders to rest and play and do things for yourself, which is difficult. It's difficult for parents to do that.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. How can you ensure, once the chaos of the school year starts, talk us through some tips for how we can find that time?
I know this might sound impossible, but it really, you can get there, is to encourage like some family quiet time, or we actually have something, we do quiet reading time, where everybody grabs their books and we just curl up and read. And that was actually something that became possible when my now 7-year-old started to get into chapter books, because now she's like, she'll just sit there and like an hour will go by and I'll look up and I'll be like, OMG, it's been quiet for an hour. So, and I also think it's okay, you know, for those moments. I mean, we all have total meltdowns or stress whatevers. I think it's really important for parents to be vulnerable and share that they need space or time. You know, I think our tendency as parents is to like just clamp down and keep going. And while yes, that can be effective in getting X, Y, or Z done, I think if you are like full of rage as you're going about things around the house, like kids pick up on that. And it's not really good for anybody, yourself most importantly. I mean, I've had moments during the school year where, or even during the summer, where I've actually said, you know, with a teenager in the house, there are a lot of requests and a lot of, can I get a ride here? Can I do this? And whatever else. And I've actually said during the summer, I can't take any inbound requests right now. I was like, you really can't ask me for anything. I've just done all these things for you. And if you can figure out how to get yourself there, fantastic. But I just need to put the brakes on because, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking, I don't want to get resentful towards you. So I think it's hard for us as parents. This is all very kind of like big and deep, but I think it's really important to say no to your kids, put some limits, and if you are going to be in a resentful space, like just don't go there. You don't have to go there. They can wait.
That's a sort of an immediate need. So the school year brings long-term needs, all of these things that the kids get involved in. So how do you...
Yes. Okay. So one of my favorite, this is more tactical. One of my favorite things to do, especially if you're juggling a calendar, and I wrote about this in Minimalist Parenting, is to do like a Goldilocks check on your calendar. I don't know if you and I have talked about this before.
No,
but
this is not familiar.
So I'm a former scientist. I like to collect data. It's very helpful to me. It's very comforting. So what I have learned to do with my family is we've actually realized that it's very helpful to sort of figure out what your Goldilocks level of busy is as a family. Because especially when kids are younger, anything that one person has on the calendar impacts the whole system, right? It's not just about that one person.
Right.
So what I recommend to parents, if they're struggling with their calendars, which is one of the number one things that parents struggle with, is to look at the calendar and literally maybe go back 6 or 8 weeks, whatever it is, and count the number of events that were on the calendar for weeks that felt just bananas crazy, the number for weeks that felt maybe a little slow, a little boring, everybody was a little restless because there wasn't much going on, and then that just right Goldilocks number, and then you know what to shoot for. Then if you have a week that's coming up where your calendar is jammed and you know it's bananas crazy level, look for stuff you can take off that calendar. Because there are, reality is, I mean, there's some things that you need to go to the practices, you need to go to the games or whatever. But there are a lot of things that end up being optional, like the ice cream school social or whatever it is. Right. So, you know, we tend to do our look ahead on Sunday and we say, okay, what's this week looking like? Is this too crazy? Should we start cutting some stuff out? And it just becomes a part of our weekly routine and it just helps enormously.
I think that's my favorite piece of advice. That it makes so much sense. It's so logical.
It's very logical.
Yeah, no, and I love that the data. I mean, the data is
data
right
doesn't
there.
Lie. Yeah.
No, that's amazing. All right, I want to talk about little kids in a minute, but before we even get to that, on a broader level. So I love that once you're in it, you have this data-driven way of making sure that you're not overwhelmed week to week. Mm-hmm. But before you get to that point of overwhelm, as we start careening towards this first day of school, what can we do to, you know, tamp it down before it starts?
I love the word careening. I think that's like, it just conjures the perfect imagery, which is so funny. Well, I think that this is a good time before all the signing up for all the things happens. I think this is the perfect time to figure out, similar to the Goldilocks level of busy, kind of like what works for your family in terms of like how many activities, you know, you might be willing to drive around for. Personally, I am someone who loathes driving around. I don't like chauffeuring. I just avoid it at all costs. So my kids, generally our rule has been, it's a one activity a season. We're a one activity a season household. A lot of people think that's nuts. Because we have many, you know, my kids have many friends who are like running from dance to, you know, math lessons to soccer to whatever. And I'm like, we can't do that. Like some families like doing that.
Right.
And they thrive on that. In which case, great. Mm-hmm. But if you are a family that needs downtime, needs quiet time, that is us. We are a family, a mix of introverts and extroverts and people who do not like to drive. So, you know, that's our rule. And beyond that, if there's something that one of the kids wants to do that's beyond that, then we need to discuss it and have some creative strategy around it. Like, maybe it's doable if you sign up with a friend so we can split the carpooling. Like, there has to be explicit parameters around it.
Strategy.
It's all about strategy. And I think you're right. I think when you said careening, I really felt like, oh, yeah, because I think you have to think about it a little with a little more intention before the flurry of papers come in and you just start signing up for stuff because it's there and your kid says they want to do it. You know, you're not like at the behest of every single request that comes in,
right.
You know? So I think it's hard to say no, but it's really, really important.
Well, and you've already laid the groundwork if you've said one.
Yeah.
So there's not this need to play the mom card really because the expectation is already out there.
Right. You know, and I will say very pointedly that I do not believe that kids should get exempt from home chores because they have too many extracurriculars. I hear a lot of parents who say, oh, I just can't do the chores because I don't want my kids to do the chores because then they don't have time for homework and all these activities. And I'm like, no. You know, they have to learn these things. You don't want them to be the 40-year-old who leaves the house and doesn't know how to make toast a bagel. Like, it's,
yeah, that's true.
I've seen that happen. So, you know, it's really important for kids to know that they are part of a family system.
What about the parent side? Because I know that parents can get roped into any number of volunteers and committees and you can name it.
Okay, well, I wonder if I should make a sort of comical confession. I haven't confessed this publicly, so.
I'm loving this, okay.
Well, so last year, I basically sort of accidentally signed up to be the classroom mom. And what happened was I saw a call for classroom parents on the school Facebook page. I saw that my daughter Violet's teacher still didn't have anyone. And I was like, do I have the time to do this? No, I don't. Came back, saw the post come into my feed again. Do I have the time? No, I don't have the time to do this. Came back a third time. And I saw that a few people had offered for the classroom. So I said, oh, this is perfect. I'll put my name in the ring. I know they're going to go by order of person. So it's cool. I'll like get the credit for offering, but I won't actually have to do it. Like how cagey is that, right? So
strategy.
Total strategy. So I did it. I felt vindicated. I was like, great. I've like done my duty, whatever. A week or two later, I'm like going through the paper clutter and getting rid of stuff. And then I catch my eye on my name on the bottom of a flyer. And I'm like, what is that? And it says, thanks to parent volunteer so-and-so and Christine Coe for volunteering to be the classroom parents. And I was like, what happened? My strategy blew up. And I thought to myself, this is karma. Like, I... So it ended up fine. But I guess I'll say, learn from me and maybe don't do that. And only sign up if you really feel like you have the time. And I would say that, especially the younger ages, like they really, you know, the schools really rely on parental support, and that's really important. But I would say my best recommendation for that, intersect with the school in a way that works well for you. So for me, does my schedule afford volunteering several hours to stand at the bake sale? No. But am I a great baker, and will I bake a bunch of stuff and send it in for the sale? Yes. So for me, that takes less time. It's fun for me. And then I feel like I've contributed. So instead of doing like signing up for something and feeling very grumpy about it, try to intersect with things and responsibilities that are actually kind of fun for you and bring you some joy. I mean, it should be fun, ultimately.
Let's talk a little bit about smaller kids, because I know this is a big time of year for, we're talking kindergartners. I mean, this
is a big deal.
It is a big deal. So, yeah. And I imagine we have emotions going on for parents, and we have stuff going on for kids. There's anticipation, and then there's the moment it happens, and then there's the, you know, I remember my daughter 2 days into kindergarten, she said, okay, I went, I'm done now.
Oh, she was done for the year after 2 days?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. You know.
Well, especially with kindergarten transitions, I have a real deep empathy for kids who are struggling with those transitions, because they are hard. They are incredibly hard for everybody. And I say this with the experience of now older daughter Laurel, who now breezes into anything in life and just with cheer and joy, but probably cried, sobbed, pulled at your pant legs for maybe the first 6 weeks of school. Also the last 6 weeks of school. I mean, it sounded like your kid who was like, okay, now I'm done now.
Yeah.
And I would say that it's very difficult when you're in the middle of it to try to remain calm and remember, okay, this isn't going to last forever. You know, the more you can just kind of work with the teacher in a friendly way and say, I'm sorry, I know this is really hard. What can I do to help? And work as a team, the better.
Well, I'm going to use the word careening again.
Yeah.
Right now, at this particular moment, we have kindergartners who are potentially not even realizing how they're anticipating the moment. Do you see that kids, or do you hear people talk about kids that are, they're not quite themselves because they have this big transition ahead and they're not sure what to do about it?
I mean, I think that's common. It's such an unknown. And even if you drive by the school, it's this huge, you know, compared to a daycare setting, it's this huge thing, and they're going to be the littlest people. I would encourage parents to try to connect with, you know, usually the PTOs of different schools will organize kindergarten potlucks or kindergarten play dates at local parks. That's a fantastic resource. A lot of schools will organize around Facebook and have private Facebook groups for incoming, you know, for whatever school you're at. And those can just be an amazing resource to discover. You know, you might discover there's another kindergartner on your down the street and you had no idea. So I think the more you can kind of create those little familiar face touch points, just take advantage of them, because the schools, they understand how hard it is. And I know our school, the PTO was out there on the first day of kindergarten with like baskets of tissues for the parents. Yeah. And, you know, they know it's hard. It's emotional.
Yeah.
It's difficult.
I know somebody who actually did a rehearsal too. She actually drove the to school.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's a good idea. Anything that can, you know, improve those touch points. I also think if you have a sensitive kiddo, or just, you know, you're not allowed to bring the big stuffies like you are at daycare, but what we did was, our older one who was quite sensitive, we got her a little locket and put a little family picture in it so she would just have it with her all the time. And that was like the little touch point she needed with home to kind of, she'd touch it through the day and just remember. And when Violet started kindergarten, our older daughter bought her one.
Aww.
And actually was, yes, it was very sweet. And it was so reflective of their personalities. Laurel put a family picture in hers and Violet put in a picture of her favorite stuffed animal. Yeah. So just, you know, sometimes those little things, they don't have to be expensive. They don't have to be fancy, but, you know, just little things like that.
Any advice for the first day? I mean, there's that, you know.
Well, this is a tip that could go all through the year, but I think in general, I would recommend for the school year, one of the things to make is just to make the morning less crazy. So I tell people, I'm like, have your child pick out the clothes the day before, lay them out, make sure there's no like missing underwear problem or whatever it may be, you know, missing laundry problem. Pack lunches the day before if you're packing lunches. If your kid has really long, snarly hair, braided up the night before. All those little things, they just will stack up to crises in the morning when, especially if there's like emotional agitation. So I always tell people, like, just in order to make those mornings easier, anything you can do to prep the night before, just do it. And give your kids some choice around it too, because that kids just like to have choice, and things go a lot easier if they have choice over things, whether that's their clothing or what goes in their lunchbox or what have you.
What is it about making lunches that we all hate so much?
I don't know, but I am actually working on right now, right this very second, an editorial piece about like school lunches and like 100 things that you can put in your, you know, so you have like a mix and match kind of cheat sheet. I don't know what it is. It is, and I will say with now a soon-to-be freshman and a soon-to-be second grade, my kids have never bought lunch, which I find to be insane. And I've offered them the money, but I think that they don't like getting in line and it takes too long and then you don't have time to actually eat the lunch and then you don't get the seat next to your friend, blah, blah, blah. That's when I'm like, okay, we're going to do a little lunch making assembly line because I do not want to do this all myself. And I think that's a real essential piece to not going crazy.
Well, once again, you know, engaging your kids in the process.
Hashtag life skills.
Yeah. I really want that 100 list, by the way.
I will send it to you. Yeah.
Well, all of this is focused on the kids, mm-hmm. but we still have to keep working.
We sure do.
Yeah. Which is, you know, so suddenly you have this whole thing going on. You have what kind of tips do you have for that?
One of the most important things to do if you are the adult in this, you know, careening situation is really to build in some transition time at the end of the day. I mean, for some people that's their commute, right?
Sure.
But I know that for me, since I work out of a home studio, I'm usually working right up until the very last second, and then I like jump into mom mode and I'm doing stuff and I feel a little scrambled. So even if it's, you know, 10 minutes where, you know, you shut down for work and you do whatever it is that fulfills you, whether it's 10 minutes of breathing or dancing in your office to Beyonce or whatever it is that will help you kind of say, okay, I'm switching modes now, I think is really, really, really helpful. Commuting obviously is a good one for that, but that's one of the benefits of commuting, I would guess.
Yeah. I want to go back to little kids for a minute because the transition that we have coming up isn't really just about kids. It's also about parents. Mm-hmm. Long-term parents that are moving from daycare to kindergarten are giving up something, too, because...
Oh, my gosh.
There's
yes.
a level of consistency with daycare that you don't get once you've gone into school.
Daycare is open all year round. It's such a beautiful thing.
Exactly. There are no surprises.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to say that's got to be the biggest sort of shock. I mean, yes, you're like, yay, I'm not paying tuition anymore. But now, OMG, like, what am I going to do with all this scheduling? So I think very first thing is I would suggest getting the school calendar, the school schedule, the district calendar. And you will be shocked when you start looking at all those dates where there's no school. But if you're prepared for it, you can make a plan. Of course, last minute things happen and sometimes the plan will go awry, but at least you could try to figure out, you know, where you're going to line up your vacations, where your partner might have to line up something, where you can intersect grandparents if there are grandparents who are available to be in the equation. Even though it's a little terrifying to put all those dates on your calendar where there's no school, like half the year, just knowing where those are is just a really crucial thing. Like first step, basic to kind of get a handle on the schedule because it's a huge transition.
It's huge. I mean, it is a different situation from daycare where the ratios were smaller. You have one teacher for a very large group of students. Do you have tricks for managing that, not just for your child, mm-hmm. but for your sense of security and comfort?
Yeah. I mean, I will say, I think that many kindergartens, perhaps not all, but many of them will have an assistant teacher. So I think they are mindful of the fact that, you know, when you're bringing in this funnel of kids who've been at a 1-6 or 1-8 or whatever the ratio is, that it's a big deal to be in this big classroom and it feels a little lawless. I always recommend, especially when it's people who are in charge of your little beings, is to lead with kindness. Take any moment of interaction that you have with a teacher, you know, say thank you. And also understand that if a teacher is maybe a little short with you in one moment, that's not reflective of the whole experience. I think we can kind of get hurt feelings about, oh, that teacher didn't give us enough time or what happened. And there's usually probably a million things on his or her mind. I have found really consistently throughout all of our public education years that, I mean, teachers are unicorns. That's like, let's be real, but they are responsive and they know they have a huge job and that all these parents are trusting them. So the more you can keep that communication open with them, the better. And also understand that some teachers will have different preferences for how they do that. Some will want to give you their phone number so you can text them. Others will prefer to operate by email. So just, you might have to be a little flexible and fluid, and it might change year to year.
And be patient, I would imagine, because...
Yes, there's a lot going on in that first year, you know, especially as, you know, the parent of a kid who used to probably take up a lot of teacher bandwidth, you know, at the very beginning. I feel for everybody in that equation. I also think it's really important the more you can connect with other parents, the better, because I feel like the more connected the parent community is, I think the more understanding there can be around transition issues. Also, if any potential bullying things come down the pike, it's just easier to sort of diffuse things if the parents actually know each other.
Is there a point in the year where you find that there's like a threshold that you cross where it goes from chaos to, okay, we have this figured out?
I'm not sure if it ever feels totally calm, because it's just, you know, you get through one season and one series of holidays and then you're on to the next thing. I feel like a lot of our timing revolves around the sports cycle of seasons, because my older one plays soccer and now my younger one will as well, which I guess is more reason to argue for the fact that, you know, we should be looking for these places to insert a little breathing room into our schedules. You can't oscillate at 100 miles an hour all the time. It's not sustainable. You know, we need break and rest and quiet time. And even your kids need some boredom to kind of like jumpstart their creativity. Anything you can do to kind of take that chaos down a notch is a really big thing.
What I find really funny is that at the other end of this, back and when you get back to June, it's almost the same as September, because the number of things that are thrown at you in June.
Yeah.
It's the longest month on earth for parents.
The number of times I've heard, I am done.
I mean,
people were so seriously done by, like, you know, by June 1st, people were already done and there were, you know, weeks left.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's field day and there's a party for this and a party for that. And it just goes on forever.
Well, and again, I will say, because it is relatively fresh in my memory, I will say that it's okay to not be present for everything. I think there's this real feeling like, okay, I'm not a good parent unless I show up to every single thing. And I remember, I don't even remember what it was now, but Violet asked if we were coming to whatever. It was like activity number 27 of the month or something. And I said to her, I actually could make it, but I just really can't. I need to stay home and work because I've already gone to this week and I have a lot of work to do. And she was like, okay, Mom, they're going to ask because they will and it's on the schedule, but it's okay if you're not at everything. I actually had an experience, and of course it was very painful, but my older one was the president of the Junior Honor Society, and I learned the week before it was happening that she was giving a speech at the closing ceremony and I was going to be in California for work. I actually thought I was going to barf. I was like, oh my gosh, how did this happen? Like, how did I not know about this? What happened? And it was extremely painful, and I did do some retail therapy. I got her a really nice dress for the occasion. But the upside was that, as we talked about at the front end of this episode, she learned that there were other people who could be there for her. My husband was there. Her little sister was there. My mom was there. One of my sisters was there. Another friend of mine videotaped it for me and sent it to me in California. So meanwhile, I'm like ugly crying in my hotel room. But I was like, it's all okay. And she did beautifully. And my role as her mom does not boil down to one moment. You know, there are so many moments. There are probably like 32 moments in June alone. So it's okay to not be there for everything.
Yeah, no, in as much as I know that was a really difficult moment, that's one of those moments that you look back and you realize she's not scarred by.
Yeah, she's fine. Yeah. So those experiences are always heart-wrenching for parents, always. And they're valid and you're feeling the feelings and so they're real. And the kids are going to be okay on the other side.
Well, the amazing thing, I can speak to this because my kids are grown, and I will tell you that almost all of those kinds of moments, I remember all of them, and they remember none of them.
Totally.
Yeah, so that's my little addition to this, is
yes,
they really will not remember.
Yes, I agree.
Don't forget to check out Christine's 100 Life Skills You Can Teach Your Kids in 5 minutes or Less. You can find it on brighthorizons.com/podcasts.
If you liked what you heard today, get more of our podcast by subscribing. While you're downloading, let us know what you thought or give us a share. Thanks to everyone for being here. We look forward to seeing you next time as we help make the work-life equation add up.